Radio Prague News.
Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek has announced that he will no longer be seeking early elections as the way out of the current political deadlock. The Green Party has said it will continue to push for early elections. The Czech Republic's elite reconnaissance unit has completed a six-month mission and returned from Afghanistan. Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek, the leader of the right-of-center Civic Democrats, has announced that his party is no longer favoring early elections as a way out of the continuing political stalemate that ensued following inconclusive elections in June. Mr. Topolánek made the announcement at a joint press conference with the Social Democrats Jiří Paroubek on Monday. The Civic Democrats leader's decision is a marked change in course. Until now, Mr. Topolánek has pushed strongly for early elections in 2007 as the only viable way out of the deadlock. In his statement on Monday, Mr. Topolánek said he would be seeking a stable solution, a government that could rule until after the Czech Republic holds the rotating EU presidency in 2009. And in related news, the Green Party is not likely to back anything other than an interim government with a mandate at latest until 2008. The head of the Greens, Martin Bursík, meeting with Prime Minister Topolánek also on Monday, said that his party would continue to back early elections as a first priority. The Greens would also like the government to be made up primarily of experts. A military counterintelligence spokesman has revealed that the elite Czech reconnaissance unit completing its six-month mission has returned from Afghanistan. The unit took part in the anti-terrorism mission Enduring Freedom for the second time in the last 2 years, helping to search for Al-Qaeda and Taliban fighters in that country's mountainous regions. The unit's commander, Ondřej Palaník, has been quoted as saying he considered it crucial that the more than 100 members of the contingent had now returned home, having fulfilled their duties. At present, 82 Czech troops are deployed in a reconstruction team within NATO's ISAF mission, and 18 troops operate at Kabul Airport as part of ISAF. Croatian President Stjepan Mesić, meeting with President Václav Klaus on Monday in Prague, has invited Czech investors to consider investment in Croatia, not least in the tourism business. Mr. Mesić stressed that the field, with Croatia's many islands, was not saturated. Croatia has been considered a favorite destination of Czech tourists in 2006 alone. More than 800,000 of them vacationed on the Croatian coast. And finally, a quick look at the weather. The coming days are likely to see more drizzling conditions with daytime highs ranging between 10 and 13 degrees Celsius. I'm Jan Wellinger, and that's the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Pavla Horáková. In today's program, the Czech counterintelligence service says it has thwarted North Korea's attempts to buy Czech machinery for its nuclear weapons program. We visit one of the biggest antiques fairs in Prague, and the first Czech center has been opened on the Asian continent. In one-on-one today, we talk to Linda Jablonská, the director of a new documentary on the lives of young conservatives and communists. Please stay with us. Over the weekend, BIS, the Czech intelligence agency, made a surprising announcement. North Korean agents have made three known attempts to purchase component parts for their nuclear program from Czech sources within the past year. Linda Maštalíš reports.
Such successes are not always reported, but BIS has revealed that during 2005 it detected and stopped three attempts by North Korean agents to purchase special equipment intended to enhance North Korea's nuclear arms program. In each case, employees of North Korean companies visiting the Czech Republic expressed interest in specialized dual-use machines and their spare parts. Experts say that North Korea desires the special equipment for production of both conventional and nuclear weapons, as well as their launchers. The technology in question would enable North Korea to produce a much smaller nuclear weapon than its current technology allows. The compatible launchers could then send the smaller nuclear warheads much farther abroad. BIS spokesman Jan Schubert says that in 2005, the Czech Secret Service managed to stop three export deals destined for North Korea. When the first attempt to buy and export the equipment failed, North Korea reportedly tried to make the purchase via a third unnamed country. According to the counterintelligence agency, North Korea has shown a consistent interest in the Czech Republic as a source country for the equipment. Despite protests over a series of missile tests it conducted back in July, North Korea conducted an underground test of a nuclear weapon on October the 9th. The move led to a United Nations Security Council resolution imposing sanctions on North Korea and strict inspection of cargo headed into and out of the country. The technology at the center of the latest revelations has been on the Czech Republic's export ban list since 2003.
Linda Mastalis reporting. On Monday, the 14th annual Antiques Trade Fair came to a close in Prague. Some 60 dealers from all over the country offered everything from 19th and 20th century art to silverware and porcelain. Besides collectors and traditional buyers, the fair also attracted hundreds of people on the lookout for unique Christmas presents or antiques to decorate their homes. Dieter Asiedu reports.
Several thousand visitors flock to Prague's Manes exhibition hall every year. Some come to buy antiques, others have dug up their old jewelry, silverware or even tobacco tins and visit the fair to use the free consultations offered by professional art and antique valuers.
Hello, my name is Jitka. This antique fair is specialized for all antiques, so you can find here old porcelain, old glass, jewelries, paintings, some old textile like national costumes, and some old dolls and toys as well. 10 years ago, it was for old people or some really specialized dealers, and mostly for foreigners. But now, young people are interested about it, and I think it's really great for our business. Of course, it depends on what are you looking for. You can find little things, beautiful things, which are not too expensive. And if you are interested about it, you can start to have some collection.
The 1990s, art dealers agree, were the golden years of the Czech world of antiques. After 40 years of communist rule, precious art and antiques were returned to their original owners en masse. Unfortunately, much of it made its way abroad. But the country's valuable heritage appears to be gradually finding its way back home. I spoke to Petra Young, the vice president of the Czech Association of Antique Dealers, about this new phenomenon and the state of the antique trade in the Czech Republic today.
I think it's just a natural process as the country is getting richer and people are more aware of their heritage and they don't consider foreign goods so glamorous anymore, because you can imagine in the 1990s, after the country has been virtually isolated for many, many years and people didn't have a chance to buy foreign goods and anything made in the West, so-called, was, you know, in our eyes, of a better value, of a better quality, etc., etc. Now people have become much wiser. They've traveled, they had a chance to see the world, they had a chance to see other cultures, and they are perhaps starting to appreciate more their own culture and are able to buy those items back.
If somebody would give you a call today from Germany, if an antiques dealer would call you, a collector from Germany or Austria or from neighboring countries, I would ask you, would it pay off for me to come to a Czech trade fair? Would it, and why?
It would depend very much on what the dealer has to offer and what prices. I don't know the German market that well. I've been to United Kingdom several times, and I know that there are items that would sell very well in the Czech Republic, like, for example, in English furniture, which is very unusual for the Czech market, and that generally the prices, and I'm not talking about the top market, I'm talking about the general use items, they generally are, I would say, very price competitive. So would a dealer consider bringing those items over here? They probably do very well. Different story would be, for example, with English jewelry, because generally their purity is not high enough for the Czech market. Their silver generally is of a lower purity than what we are used for.
What about Czech antiques abroad? What would sell like hotcakes?
I still think that there is a very large number of painters who are of a very high quality and are unknown abroad. And I would say that the prices of oils generally are very, very low compared to what you pay for quality oils in the Western countries. So I think that if you did a careful selection of oil paintings, decorative, where it doesn't really matter who the author is, because you know the foreign audience will not appreciate it, then I think you could do very, very well with that. I also know that, for example, on the English market, that figures by your Royal Dux reach very high prices, much more than they reach here. Tonnet furniture quite often is very, very interested, you know. So again, it depends which country you travel to, and you need to make a selection based on that. But we're starting to get quite a lot of inquiries from United States, let's say, because I think the Americans are quite adventurous with that, and they happy to actually look at new authors and possibly invest in them.
And I was speaking there to Petra Young, the vice president of the Czech Association of Antique Dealers. Now, every year, the proceeds of the sale of selected antiques at the trade fair go to charity. This year, they'll be used to finance a project in Plzeň that helps families with children battling serious physical and mental disabilities.
That report by Dita Asieru.
The network of Czech centres, institutions promoting Czech culture abroad, has once again expanded. A brand new Czech centre has recently opened in Japan's capital, Tokyo, at the Czech Republic's embassy. The Czech Republic is known in Japan mainly for its classical music, successes in sport, and in recent years also for its animated film. The Czech Centre will now try to bring more aspects of Czech culture to Japan. I spoke to its director, Petr Holý, over the phone and asked him what the first Czech Centre to be opened on the Asian continent can offer to its visitors.
The centre was launched by an exhibition of collages by Jan Schwankmeier. They are actually illustrations to the latest Japanese edition of Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland. Until April next year, we'll be running an exhibition of glass objects by Bożek Šípek. Another important event we organized was a festival of films by director Jan Hřebejk. For December, we're planning an exhibition of photographs by Daniel Sperl. And for next January, we're hoping to invite artist František Skála to present his comic book.
The centre is gradually building a library thanks to contributions from Czech publishers, and Petr Holý says it will soon provide Czech lessons.
Czech classes have been going on for years in Japan. I myself was a teacher until recently. Our Czech courses will start in January, and we're very pleased that the number of people interested in this difficult language is increasing in Japan too.
And you can find more information on www.czechcenters.cz. You are tuned to Radio Prague, and now Ian Willoughby is here with a look at the latest sports news.
Thank you, Pavla. Roman Šebrla has been named Czech Athlete of the Year for the fifth time in a row, after a successful season in which he took gold in the decathlon at the European Championships in Gothenburg. The poll of journalists, officials and trainers was a close-run thing, however, with Šebrla just pipping Barbara Špotáková in the closest vote in a decade. Špotáková shot to fame this year with gold in the javelin at the World Athletics Final, silver at the European Championships, and a new Czech record. Roman Šebrla said he believes Špotáková will come first in the javelin at the next Olympic Games, and he isn't afraid that she may eventually replace him as athlete of the year.
I will be happy if there is a tougher fight for top place. I can't judge how I will perform in a year's time. I can't say how Bara will be doing. But if next year there are 10 athletes who are serious candidates for Athlete of the Year award, that will only be a good thing for Czech athletics and the Czech Republic.
Roman Šerbula. Moving on, Martina Sablíková has become the first ever Czech to take a medal at the Speed Skating World Cup. Sablíková won bronze in the 3,000 metres at Holland's Herenveen on Sunday. The Czech ice hockey team finished second in Finland's Karjala Cup, which is part of the Euro Hockey Tour. The Czechs beat Sweden before losing to Finland and being beaten by tournament winners Russia on penalties. The Czech Republic are currently bottom of the table in the four-country tour. The country's richest and most successful football club, Sparta Prague, are currently top of the Czech league for the first time in 18 months. They went first after beating Olomouc 1-0 and watching former leaders Liberec go down 3-0 to Teplice. Sparta have made quite a turnaround since Michal Bílek took over as manager in early September. From that time, they haven't lost a game and have conceded only one goal. The Czech national team will have to do without captain Tomáš Rosický on Wednesday when they take on Denmark in a friendly in Prague. Rosický picked up a thigh injury in training at his club Arsenal. Jiří Jarošík has also cried off with an ankle injury, but the fact that he appeared for club Glasgow Celtic on Saturday seems to confirm speculation about a rift between Jarošík and Czech manager Karel Brückner. That's all the sport for today.
You are listening to Radio Prague. I'd like to remind you that on Friday, November the 17th, Radio Prague will air a special programme which takes a look back at the days of the Velvet Revolution 17 years ago in 1989. But now it's time for our interview programme one-on-one. Today, Jan Wellinger talks to documentary film director Linda Jablonská.
In today's one-on-one, my guest is young documentary filmmaker Linda Jablonská, who has made a splash on the Czech scene with Left, Right, Forward, a new documentary about the behind-the-scenes lives of two curious groups on the Czech political spectrum, the young conservatives and the young communists. The film is extremely engaging and at times also very funny. Throughout, Jablonská maps the routines and events of both groups, from charity balls to day trips to demonstrations. And it's no surprise the feature film took the better part of a year to complete. When I met with Linda to talk about Left, Right, Forward, the first thing I asked her was whether she, as a filmmaker, found one of the groups more interesting.
Well, shooting the young communists definitely was kind of more interesting, considering the visual part, like the red flags, the Stalin and Lenin portraits, and whatever. And also, like, the young communists for us are something, like, really rare. The young conservatives are quite, they're not normal, not at all, but they're definitely a bit more closer to us or to our thinking. So it was more interesting shooting with the young communists, definitely.
What surprised you about the young communists? I was thinking in terms of how they understand the impact of communism on Czechoslovakia in the past.
Mm-hmm. Well, they are about the same age as me, so a bit younger. So what I remember, I don't remember anything from the, well, very little. And they don't remember anything because they were like 5 or 4 when the revolution came. So that's quite interesting to actually see how they idealize the, for example, the 70s. That's quite unusual, I think, within young Czech people. They want to live in the 70s, which is really rare.
It wasn't the best of times for a lot of people, so I find it strange that somebody would idealize it.
No, it definitely wasn't. It was such a shitty time, actually. They think, well, what they think is that everybody had work. Everybody have to work, actually. So there were no homeless. There were no disabled people. There were no, I don't know what. They just think that everybody were happy, fine, within their Eastern Bloc. And they are against capitalism, so they hate that somebody who know how to make money have the money and the other who doesn't know how to make money doesn't have the money. They want everyone to have equal. So that's why they idealize this regime. But it wasn't like this, but I think so.
If we're talking about ideals, how do the young conservatives compare? What are their ideals?
Well, they don't want to pay any taxes. they really look up to the United States. They look up to George Bush. And they just don't have these social feelings. So they think that everyone should work for himself, make his money, and they just don't want the state to have an influence of where the money goes.
Mm-hmm. And how important is, for example, the figure of the Czech president, Václav Klaus?
Hmm. Václav Klaus for them is a big idol. They really look up to him, and even before when he was the head of the Rightish party. And they actually have his portrait in their houses, in their rooms, you know, which is quite interesting because we used to put the portraits of the presidents up to every room or classes, but we don't do it anymore. So that's quite funny. I haven't seen it anywhere else, but we really were in like three or four rooms of young conservatives, and there was Václav Klaus in every single room, and they read his books, and when the phone rings, they have Václav Klaus speaking, like the voice of him, of his, which
the ringtone.
Yeah, the ringtone. Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Now, trust is obviously important. Mm. How did you go about getting the two different groups, the people in them, to trust you?
Well, definitely it was a lot of work. I went to their meetings before we start shooting without the camera, just me. I kind of become friendly to them. I never lied to them. I never said I followed their ideas, but I was friendly. I didn't argue with them because I knew that it doesn't make sense. And if I start arguing with them, I wouldn't shoot anything. So we were kind of like, we were friendly. And I can't say that I made it in purpose, that they are not my friends. Well, they are not my friends, like close friends. But since I try to understand why they actually are young communists, and since I think I found out why they have entered the organization and so on, and I found out that might be their parents or might be whatever, so I kind of understand them. Also, the young conservatives and the young communists, they want to kind of represent them, and they want to be in the media. So that's why they were open.
It struck me that taken together, both groups, to a certain degree, are misfits. There's the young communist, 17 years old, and there's the scene in the film where he berates a trio of young or of teenage girls. And my own reaction was, well, he's 17, he should probably be trying to pick up one of these girls instead of complaining that they don't know enough about a Russian hero supposedly died for their freedom. What are your feelings? Are they misfits?
I think that's why they are young communists. I think they want to be misfits because they feel good in it. Basically, they are in opposition, and that's what they like, to be in the opposition. Like they say, everybody hates us, but they actually, when they say it, they like it.
It seems like there's also some kind of security within belonging to some kind of group.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. That's a very closed group. They have the relationships within the organization. You know, they go out together, they go to weekend houses, whatever. I think basically one of the reasons why somebody enters the organizations is also because he might not have found any good friends anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. Now, shortly before your film was released, the Interior Ministry effected a ban on the Young Communist Association for backing some policies that they say are unconstitutional. What are your feelings about the ban?
I don't really think it matters. I think it's I think they will gather anyway, you know, and they're still functioning, and they will go to trial, and they want to go to European trial as well. So it can take 1 year or maybe more, you know, and nothing will happen in between. I think it was a political act before the elections, that's for sure. It was just like a few days before the elections. But I think why they actually did this, I would say, well, because of the Stalin T-shirt. Because of all the symbols and what they say.
Mm-hmm. Young Hunza, the 17-year-old, actually has a Stalin T-shirt on for much of the movie. What is sexy about Stalin to them?
What's about Stalin? Well, Stalin is a hero for them, for some of them. It's not for all of them. And I also think it's because they kind of feel a special when they say Stalin is a good person. Nobody says this, you know, but them. Even the old communists from Czech Communist Party, they don't say this, never. So, but what's sexy about Stalin? Well, they think he was the one who killed Nazism. He was the one who won the war, basically. And the fact that there were millions of people dying, it's kind of, well, that was the time, you know. That's the time, that's how it went. Yeah. So that was the need, that, well, there had to be some people killed to win the war, I guess. Or to win whatever.
Have you had feedback from either group, from the young conservatives or from the communists?
Yeah, they saw the film actually, like, the first ones, because I wanted to be fair, so I showed it to them. Some of them really liked it. They were like, totally, oh, wow, that's such a cool film. And they were laughing when the other group was on, so they were laughing at it. But the thing is, what happened then, that, like, when they were watching it in their rooms alone, they were okay. But then we showed it in the festival in Jihlava, and everybody was, like, laughing like hell. And then they went there, and they kind of realized, you know, like, they're laughing at us. Like, they didn't knew what's going to happen, and I didn't knew what's going to happen, you know. They didn't, but now, right now, they're famous.
Do you see any of them going beyond being, say, just foot soldiers, politicians at a local level, to actually making it higher up in politics? Can we rule it out?
I'm not sure. I can't say. But I kind of commented on it. I kind of choose the people because I thought they could make it up. I'm not sure about the communists, but they are actually working on the basic level, on the, like, lower politics. They're actually in it. But the higher politics, I'm not sure, but I think so. Yeah, some of them we can, maybe within 10 years, we will see these youngsters in higher positions.
And that brings us to the end of the program. The address for your comments and reception reports is english@radio.cz or Radio Prague, 12099 Prague, the Czech Republic. My name is Pavla Horáková. Thanks for listening and goodbye.
Ici Radio Prague, programme en langue française des émissions internationales de la radio tchèque, Ondes Courtes. Pour bénéficier d'une agréable réception, voici la grille de nos horaires en temps universel et fréquence en kilohertz. Sept heures, 7h27, 5930, 7345, Europe. 8h30, 8h57, 9860, 11600, Europe. Dix-sept heures trente, 17h57, 5930, 15710, Europe, Afrique centrale. 19h30, 19h57, 5930, 9430, Europe, Afrique. 23h, 23h27, 5930, 7345, Amérique du Nord. Nous vous invitons à l'écoute sur le web. Pour cela, veuillez vous connecter au site www.radio.cz/français. Radio Prague est aussi sur le satellite. Vous trouverez toutes les informations sur notre site www.radio.cz/français.